League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. How long have they been calling us fast? I don't know how I feel about that.
How long have they been calling us the fastest?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be called fast.
It's been a long time.
It's a bit insulting, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, does that mean that we just, like, we can go topic to topic quickly, or?
It depends on how you, I guess it depends on how you take it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you get some fast people, that's not always a good thing. You
True.
Know what I mean?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Astros aren't fast, though, in terms of racing out to, you know, X amount of wins, 13 wins, 14 wins, 15 wins, doesn't matter. They're not there. Astros lose again, fourth loss in a row. They've lost the series against the Yankees. They will try to salvage a game in the Bronx coming up a little bit later today. Yesterday, very much the same thing, Blankers. You get a Kyle Tucker home run, and then you get a bunch of runs from the Yankees in a short period of time. Never really a contest, and I think the secret here is Kyle Tucker needs to stop homering.
I guess so, because I'm driving home listening to the game, and the minute he hit the bomb, I was like, oh, no. I was like, please tell me it's a different scenario than the night before. Please tell me they can at least get out of the first inning. And lo and behold, they couldn't get out of the first inning. And if I asked you in retrospect, would you take 5-5 from Spencer Arrigetti?
Jeez, you went there quick. You're patting yourself on your back.
No, I'm not, because I didn't want it to happen. It was like the third or fourth inning, and I'm looking at the game's on in the living room, and I look up and I go, I want to be wrong. Please don't let him get to five. And it just, and then of course, it happened to be those guys too. All three of their big three go yard, and you're just like, God, this is ugly.
No, I thought about you whenever it was the five runs, five innings. You nailed it. You did. You did pat yourself on the back pretty quickly, but you did nail it.
I learned from you. I know that I got to pounce. When the iron
is
hot,
is good for the gander.
Yeah,
the,
I mean,
now I would still take the unknown though. Like you scored four runs. Like give me the unknown. Like you still would have lost even if you took the five runs in five innings. You know, you did. I mean, it's literally what happened.
I wanted you guys to go against me because I wanted to be wrong. I said that. I just didn't have a great feeling about what I've seen so far from Spencer Arrigetti against a lineup as good as the Yankees, and unfortunately, it came to fruition because I'm starting to throw in the towel. I'm starting to get to the point where there's nothing that I can hang my hat on and hold out hope to say that I still believe, because they just find and invent game after game ways to just give you no reason to have hope.
Yeah, I want to challenge our listeners too. Like, if you still have hope about this team, I want to hear about it. 713-780-ESPN. I threw in the towel yesterday on the recommendation of Brian McDonald. What do you need to say to Blankers for him to throw in the towel?
Yep.
Or prevent him from throwing in the towel? 713-780-3776. Keep him from throwing in the towel. Tucker's the only good thing that's going right now. You know, he was only 1-for-5. Dubon had a three-hit game. That was nice. Myers, he's good against lefties.
Your cleanup hitter.
Lineup every single time against lefties. Yeah, I mean, the home run was great. The other two hits were infield singles, which you'll take, but usually you don't have guys legging out infield singles in the cleanup spot. Usually those are guys, like, towards the top of the order. So, I'm going to die on that hill. I think that Pena, if you're going to have Pena in your top four spots, it should be a top two spot, not the next two spots.
Yeah, no, look, I would just reshuffle the top four at this point, and I would just go Altuve, Pena, Yordan, Tucker, and give that a shot. But at this point, you might as well do whatever the hell you want to do and give anything a shot, because nothing is working to this point to a level that leads you to win Major League Baseball games. And with each passing day, there's another reason why you can point a finger and basically, like I said, have zero hope that this team has any chance of making the playoffs this year.
Yeah, it's not looking great for the Astros. Now, you know, the Tombstone Astros were 15-30. This team's 12-23, so maybe they're on the Tombstone Astro pace, and, you know, maybe they can flip it around, but where is the confidence level of that? 713-780-3776. When you look at the pitching yesterday, too, like, this is another example that they're not really a good team, and maybe they, when they get the pitching back, now that's assuming a lot. It's assuming a lot of health. Maybe when they get the pitching back, it's a much better pitching stat than what we see now. But Spencer Arrighetti's throwing, like, legitimate innings in a big league regular season, and I don't think he's quite ready. The pitches that he had to Soto and Judge that he homered, I don't know if you saw the little track man or whatever on that. It's not track man, it's more pitch location. Both were middle-middle, mm-hmm. like on the two home runs that he gave up. So it's like, okay, you're giving valuable innings in a real big league regular season to a guy who's a fringe pitcher. Sean Dubin, he's had his moments. He's got an 8.38 ERA. He's a fringe pitcher at the big league level. And I think Taylor Scott has been mostly good, but another fringe pitcher at the big league level. When you look at the Astros, like the entire season, and you look to see like who's logged innings, there are so many fringe big league pitchers. And I think it's a big reason. There's a lot of reasons, but I think it's a big reason why you've seen this poor start.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. That's why I kept going to injuries and the lack of like quality starting pitchers, especially when you lose all three guys in the top that were expected to be top three of your rotation. But to your point, when you look at it and you say, you know, to me, I thought early on Dubin had the kind of stuff that looked like he could be a guy that could contribute. I like Scott. I think Scott can still contribute. He gave up a run in the first game in the Yankee series that kind of were some late just dribblers and things and not great. I didn't really put that one on him. Last night he gave up a run. But when I look at Dubin, it's like Dubin is like Coleman to me. When you bring in a guy that can't find the strike zone, I don't care how lively your arm is. If there's going to be games where you can't do anything in your power to throw a strike, and at that point a competitive strike, then you don't have any business being on this team and probably most Major League Baseball teams. And unfortunately, we've seen that more times than not with everybody that they've had to call up. And if Arrighetti's on this roster doing what you said he was doing by getting these starts, and I don't believe he – I'm with you. I don't believe he's worthy of being a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. But you already demoted a J.P. France who last year gave you a half season that was decent as a starter, and you are already done with him. I don't care how much Dana Brown saw something in Arrighetti before the season. I've seen enough right now to not see him the rest of the year on this roster and be fine with it.
Yeah, I mean – France isn't good either, though. Like, Arrighetti's stuff actually plays better than they're both fringe big leaguers and maybe not big leaguers. And I think Arrighetti eventually is a back end of the rotation starting pitcher in Major League Baseball, but he's not there yet. I mean, it's the growing pains. Like, you wouldn't expect this guy to be pitching multiple spots and taking turns in a rotation with a really good baseball team. Maybe a spot start here and there, but the Astros just aren't a very good baseball team right now. Like, the Sean Dubin, like, that guy's not in a big league bullpen. Like, he's a guy that comes up and pitches once or twice because there's a rash of injuries. And people, well, that's why he's pitching. Okay, well, like, he was pretty close to being in the bullpen when the season started because the Astros lack some bullpen depth. And yes, Taylor Scott's been a good story, but Taylor Scott, and like, I don't care who your mop-up reliever is, so like Brandon Belak being in this bullpen, whatever, it's irrelevant to me. You need an arm in your bullpen that's going to eat innings. It doesn't matter if he's good, doesn't matter if he's bad. So I don't mind that Brandon Belak is the mop-up pitcher for the Astros. When you have a Sean Dubin in your bullpen, that's an issue. Like, Taylor Scott should be the worst pitcher outside of Brandon Belak that you have in your big league bullpen. Seth Martinez, solid, but is closer to that lower leverage than the higher leverage. The Astros have holes when it comes to the pitching staff. A.R. Platinum talks, he says the Kyle Tucker home run, you know, it's kiss of death whenever he hits the home run. 9-5-1-3, rotation is almost healthy. They tinker and figure out the right lineup. We'll go on a run. Bullpen will get more rest and not give up the leads. But what's going to be too much? Like, the rotation is almost healthy. What is almost healthy? Is it Javier coming back? Is it Urquidy coming back? Is it until the summer when Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers, knock on wood, come back? And when you get to those dates, Javier this weekend, I don't think that would qualify here, but when Urquidy comes back, when Luis Garcia comes back, when Lance McCullers, we'll believe it when we see it, comes back, are you already out of the race? Like, it's easy to say, well, they're going to get healthy at some point, but what is their record when they get healthy?
Yeah, look, I would love to say that Michael Bourne, who joined us yesterday, was the last line of defense for me to hold out for 60 games and then see where they're at. But, you know, with each passing day, when you go further back in the race, because I always held out hope that, look, the easiest way to get to the playoffs is win your division, and the division was at a very attainable distance for the majority of how bad they got off to the slow start. But now you're double digits. You're double digits across the board, and that's where you really start digging the insurmountable hole, where it doesn't matter who you get back and when you get them back, because you're not the Major League Baseball players are too good for you to do what a few teams are capable of doing every season. Like the Twins just rattled off like 12 in a row, but that's not the norm. That's not what happens, and that's especially when they're a team that's in desperation mode because they have to have it happen. The odds are stacked against you. We knew that going into how bad they started. And now with each passing game, it's like the numbers, the odds are going down. Your level of performance ain't going up. And then when we talked about starting pitching, we talked about guys that are fringe major leaguers. The only problem on top of that is you also got a guy that was supposed to be an above average major leaguer in Hunter Brown that looks like he might be as fringy as everybody that we're already done with. So across the underperformance along with how deep we're getting into the season now doesn't paint a pretty picture.
No, I would absolutely call Hunter Brown fringy.
Yep.
There's no doubt about it. And if you were healthy, Hunter Brown probably is pitching in Sugar Land.
Yep.
Like if you had all those starters that we just mentioned, those four guys, Hunter Brown's not pitching. He's certainly not in the starting rotation. And I've seen all these tweets about Hunter Brown. Well, then move him to the bullpen. Have you seen Hunter Brown's first inning of these games? Like, what gives you the idea that he would be good out of the pen? His worst innings are the first inning when he's fresh into the game. So, like, and I know that his stuff is, like, what they're talking about.
Yep.
But, like, I have fear in moving Hunter Brown into the bullpen at this moment because he's getting lit up at the beginning of games. Like, that's not the makings of a reliever at all.
No, and I've been harping on this and you and I have talked about it on multiple occasions. As a relief pitcher, he'd be a 2-3 pitcher guy. Like, I don't want to see that slow knuckle curve, whatever you're calling it. I'm calling it a horse bleep because it comes in screaming, just pound me into submission. I don't care how many pitches you could throw. Give me fastball, give me slider, give me one other pitch, and then go try and get three guys out and empty the tank every time you go out there. That I would have at least some confidence he could do because I believe that he has two really good major league pitches. But this repertoire pitches we have seen this year and his lack of control has led us to change a whole lot of opinions, including our own, about who this guy is and what he can be for this franchise and maybe for any other franchise because the tinkering didn't work, the extra pitches haven't helped, and he looks like he can't find the strike zone when he needs to.
Yeah, you might. I mean, that might ultimately be who he is, like Keith Law told us, and everybody was ready to bash Keith Law for saying that because they want optimism. They want the good story. They want the good side of the range of what a player can be. Because, yeah, you're probably right. Like, if he reinvented, I don't think he could do this overnight, but if he reinvented to, like, okay, I'm going to have a two-pitch mix instead of a four-pitch mix, and I'm going to get rid of the two pitches that are getting lit up, that might be his long-term role as a big leaguer. And we see this all the time from starters.
Yep.
Kendall Graveman's on this roster. He's on the injured list. But Kendall Graveman was the same type of guy. Kendall Graveman came up as a starter, didn't have much success as a starter, but was a big arm. And they're like, okay, this is probably not going to work as a starter. Let's reinvent his role as a big leaguer. And he turned into a really good reliever whenever he's right. 713-780-ESPN. Why should Blankers not throw in the towel on this team? Let me throw a number at you real quick.
Okay.
Because you mentioned like it might be easier to get – I don't think it was you. It's actually a texter, I believe. That it might be easier to win the American League West than a wild card. Maybe. We'll see. Right now, the third wild card is slightly better than Texas. Texas leads the division 22-17. Kansas City has a half-game lead on Texas. They're the third wild card, 22-16. I would bet money that the AL West champion finishes with a better record than the third wild card, but I would admit that it's in play, that it's plausible. Last year, Toronto was the third AL wild card with 89 wins. So the Astros, if they were to reach 89 wins, that's what Toronto had last year, third AL wild card, they would have to go 77-49 in their final 126 games to reach 89 wins. So that's lofty. That's a 6.11 winning percentage. If you do the math, that's a 99-win pace over 162 games. So they would have to be a 99-win pace over the next 126 games for them to reach 89 wins. In what world is this Astros team, if you just restarted the year, a 99-win team?
Yeah, look, I think that's definitely attainable. That's the most encouraging thing I
can hear.
You think
it's attainable?
If you started the season from scratch, all over again,
yeah,
and they were healthy.
With this staff?
I think they could.
With these guys, with this offense
well,
slumping?
That's the key. If they were healthy, I think they could win 99 games. If they were healthy. But, I mean, that would mean to me that you have not lost and you're not going to lose Framber, Javier, Verlander. And then you still have to – and you'd have to tell me that Blanco's going to be the guy that he's been this year as opposed to what he's been previous to this. I think that team is capable of winning 99 games. I think of where they're at right now, I think of the way that they found and invented ways to lose, both offensively and with pitching, and sometimes defense. And I have little to any hope at all that that's even going to be something that they can come close to doing to bring some excitement back to the city in regards to baseball this season.
Okay, so it sounds like you're still on the fence. You haven't thrown in the towel yet. Why should Blankers not throw in the towel? I'm there. I'm out.
Michael Bourne told me, 60 games.
Out. Yeah, that's cool. I love Michael Bourne. He's very smart. He went to the University of
Houston. Jeremy, I'm grasping here.
That's fine, and I look. That's yeah. You can. I'm not telling you not to. And I mean, disagreement's good. Certainly not afraid to disagree.
Right.
I'm officially out on the Astros. This is the first time all year where I do not think that the Astros can win the division. I'm giving up on the Astros winning the American League West. What are you giving up on when it comes to this Astros team? Who are you giving up on? On this Astros team, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Busy show. It's a Thursday, Bad Take Boulevard. We'll gripe plenty about the Astros. Where does C.J. Stroud rank amongst quarterbacks in the NFL? J.J. Watt, is he coming back? Is he not coming back? Stop playing with our emotions. It is a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. On YouTube at ESPN Houston. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, why shouldn't Blank throw in the towel? Why do you still have hope? Have you given up on the Houston Astros? And who have you given up on when it comes to the Astros? 713-780-3776. I, for instance, have given up on the Astros' chances of winning the American League West. I'm officially off that train. If I gun to my head, somebody said, I'm going to shoot you if you're wrong, which is a terrible way to describe this. But do you think the Astros win the division? Gun to my head, I don't. This is the first day of the baseball season where I have felt that way. Gun to your head, Blankers, do the Astros win the division?
They don't. No, that's one I have to be out
okay,
on.
You're still plausible.
Hanging on the fact that they can get into the playoffs, hopefully. But that and believe me, there is a very, very slim glimmer of hope that I'm hanging on to. But I have that ship has sailed in terms of winning the division.
Yeah, you were where I was like yesterday, where it's like, okay, I can see the writing on the wall. I have a really good feeling that the Astros aren't going to win the division, but I just don't want to give up hope. They've been non-competitive.
I don't either, but
non-competitive.
Yeah. That's the thing.
If we were still,
if we were doing things that we were doing early in the season, if we were watching this team and saying, hey, they were leading for three quarters of the game, hey, they were winning, or it was a one-run game, and they were up or late or they were in it, sure. But the way they're just getting their ass handed to them by a team that they've owned over the play, at least in the playoffs, for several years, as well as every other team, you know, when you keep inventing ways to lose, it's like it's hard to hold out hope.
Yeah, it is. It is. So I've given up on the Astros winning the American League West. How about some players that you've given up on? Spencer Arrighetti yesterday. Have you given up on Spencer Arrighetti? Somebody texted and said, I'd rather have spaghetti over Hunter Brown. He has more upside. I would disagree with that.
I
hope that you like meatballs with your spaghetti because he gave up a few yesterday.
Yeah, big ones too, including the hardest hit baseball of the season to Stanton.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. There's no way of those two guys that I'm going to give up on Hunter Brown. Not that I have a whole lot of hope on either one of those guys either, but if I have to pick one or the other, I think Brown has better stuff. I think he has a better upside. I think we just talked about, like, one of the reasons why I'm bothered by his pitch selection and all the pitches that he's trying to use instead of sticking with what has worked for him in the past. Whereas I think Eric Geddy, like, as you would call, he's a 4A player right now. He's not a guy that belongs in the major leagues on any team starting as a starting pitcher, let alone a pitcher probably.
Yeah, I say fringe with him because I don't like calling young pitchers 4A pitchers because I don't think that the book's written on them.
No, right now,
I look at 4A guys. Yeah, I just don't like putting that label on them, though. And if this is very nitpicky and nuanced, I get it. I just have a tough time calling young players 4A player. I think he's a prospect that probably is better suited for minor league baseball right now. Not saying he can't be a big leaguer. Like, it's not Jason Lane, where he's in his 30s, and it's like, okay, he's a really good AAA player, but he's not a very good major leaguer. So I find there to be a little difference. Todd the Show, his optimism, he thinks the Astros go 13-3 over the next stretch of games that they have, Detroit, Oakland, Milwaukee, Angels, Oakland. Which that is favorable. They're going to have to go on a tear there because of where they've positioned themselves.
Like, I responded to Todd, and I said, that's all fine and dandy if the A's were the A's of the last several years and the Tigers were the Tigers of the last several years. But the A's have been playing good baseball. The Tigers have been playing good baseball. And you're not playing good baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the A's have been better than the A's, but they're still the A's. Like, they're a losing team. They're under 500. But, yes, much more talent, way better than the Oakland single A's that we used to call them. Mm-hmm. And you're looking up in the standing to the Oakland A's. So, like, who are you to say that this team is lousy when the Oakland A's have 4.5 games up in you on the division? Like, they're 4.5 back of the wild card. You're 9. So they're 4 back in the division. You're 8.5. So you can't be sitting there, well, the single A's are terrible. They're producing way better than you are. 713-780-ESPN.
We used to have the Yankees calling the Astros their daddy, and now you're looking it up at the A's thinking that they might be your daddy in the division. That's ridiculous.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Willie on the East End, you're in the Hive. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm calling because you said, what Astro you've given up on. Well, I like to say I'm not giving up on him. I never did like him, and that's Dana Brown. Because I thought he undermined the manager last year, and, you know, with all those interviews about who the manager makes the lineup and all that stuff. And last year, they said about the injuries. Last year, when the season first started, there was a lot of injuries on the Astros, you know, like Garcia, Altuve. The big guy got hurt there in Atlanta with his neck. He had to come home. And you had V-Lax starting and this guy here, Bonko, and J.P. France. Nobody thought they was going to be in the lineup at the beginning. Injuries is not an excuse. Dusty kept them afloat till everybody got back. Thanks for taking my call.
Wasn't the big guy's injury in Atlanta a bellyache?
It was kind of vague.
He inhaled firework smoke or something?
I mean, we never really got a true story there. Like, he was feeling lightheaded. He went to the hospital. Like, we never – I mean, it's the Astros. Like, we never got what it actually was. Just like we don't know if Jordan had one or two bad hands. Just like two guys have been placed on the injured list because of sleeping on a pillow in a hotel the wrong way. Like, it's like Framber Valdez injuring his elbow but not needing an MRI. Like, it's all vague and mysterious when it comes to the Astros disclosing injuries. I would take Dusty Baker back in a heartbeat, to Willie's point. Now, did Dana Brown undermine Dusty Baker? I don't know if I would go that far.
Yeah, I don't know if it was undermining. They disagreed. There's no doubt about it. But, I mean, I think that James Click obviously disagreed with Dusty. That's part of – everybody has disagreements on a daily basis sometimes. And that's – sometimes that's what makes the best and the most communicative relationships within anything, but especially as it relates to, like, sports manager, general manager types. But if there's conflict that goes unresolved and there's not adequate communication, that's how relationships dissolve. That's what we saw with Crane and Click. That's what we saw with Click and Dusty. That's what led to Click's not being there anymore. And then Dusty had his issues last year with Dana Brown. But if you're Dana Brown, you're also trying to establish yourself in the first time at a job and try to have the credibility and the respect of the people you're working with, too. So you have to make sure your opinions are heard.
All right, so who are we willing to give up on? 713-780-ESPN. I'm giving up on the Astros winning the American League West, but what about players? Who are players that you're willing to give up on? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. Look, Doc Linville's got a variety of different ways he can help you if you're suffering from some kind of hair loss. It starts with maybe looking into PRP first. PRP, and you've heard about it through the years with athletes using it for their joints and different ailments that they've had in terms of injuries. But PRP can be used to stimulate hair growth as well. It's less expensive than the NeoGraft procedure that I had, and it's something that you may want to investigate first and foremost to see if that's the first option. If it's not, and Doc will be honest with you because Doc does both, but if Doc Linville and his staff say, hey, you're too far along, the PRP is not going to stimulate enough growth with the follicles you have left. There's also the NeoGraft procedure, which is taking hair from areas you're never going to lose it, sides in the back of your head, and putting it where you need it most, whether it's up front, whether it's up on top and back. It doesn't matter. Wherever you need it, he can put it, and you can see the results almost the next day. And in 6 to 9 months, when those follicles grow in, get stronger and longer, and because they're coming from a place where they're never going to fall out, you're going to love the results that you see, and on a daily basis, it's going to get better and better. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. I did it. Couldn't be happier with it. I'd recommend it to anybody and encourage anyone that hates the fact that they're losing their hair to get the procedure done because it works. That's why you, as a listener to ESPN 97.5, get this great deal. This is why I'm telling you, go in and check it out because it's free. The free consultation with Doc and his staff, because you listen to us by going to 975hair.com, is something that you, at your very least, you owe it to yourself to check out. Go in, ask questions, get answers, have them explain the procedure. Just see if it's something you might be interested in. If you're not, walk away. No commitment, no money out of pocket, nothing. Nothing lost, but maybe the information gained. But if it really does intrigue you and you're interested in it, I would consider and I would encourage you to consider doing the procedure. I did it, could not be happier with it, and I think you could be the next in line too. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5. You found the Killer Bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. Who are you giving up on this Astros team in 2 minutes? 713-780-3776. Before that, though, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chris in Jersey Village. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys. What's going on, Joel, Jeremy? Hey, listen, you know, I tried to convince Jeremy to start rethinking his opinion, and maybe yours too, Joel, about Yordan playing left field. I just looked at his splits. 386 when he's playing defense and 180 something when he's DH. At this point, we have nothing to lose. I am a self-renowned body language expert, Joel. Okay. And we can read Yordan's body language, right? He's not happy. He's not happy at all out there. Yeah, I know he's not hitting,
Chris,
but I think there's more to it.
Would you bat Yordan second or third? Would you bat him second or third?
Oh, my God. You know what? Y'all can make fun all you want to.
I'm not making fun of you.
He's asking you a legit question, Chris.
I'm not making fun of you. I'm asking you, where do you prefer him, the two-hole or the three-hole?
You know what? Two-hole was okay. Three-hole's okay. You know, to me, it doesn't really matter as long as he's hitting. You know, so okay. If he wants to play left field, let him play left field. You know, y'all's point is, I understand you don't want him to get hurt playing defense. You know, we've seen the close
51
calls.
51 games, Chris. 51 games.
But at this point, you have nothing to lose. I mean, he's hitting under 200 when he's DHing. So if he gets hurt, oh, well, we'll just replace him with another guy who's hitting 180. So great show, guys.
That's a good point. So, what Chris is saying is that Yordan, historically, and this year is even more staggering, performs better in left field versus DH, and the numbers back up what Chris is saying. The numbers are true, what Chris is saying. In left field this year, 49 plate appearances, Yordan hits .366 with an over 1,000 OPS. 25 games as a DH, 109 plate appearances. He's hitting .186 with a .361 slugging. Now, if you look at the course of his career, left field, 157 games, 658 plate appearances, .329 average, over 1,000 OPS. In 349 games as the DH, over 1,500 plate appearances, .274 average with a .909 OPS. The numbers back up what Chris is saying. Mm-hmm. There's no argument there. In terms of the facts, Chris is speaking the truth. I don't put a whole lot of stock into that. I think it's kind of silly. Now, the numbers would back up Chris's point. Again, the numbers back him up. I don't put a whole lot of weight in that, but am I wrong? Is Chris right? Should we be putting weight in that?
I think it's quirky. I think that, I don't know, you know, if that's one of those things where when we talk about players and their routines and rituals and what keeps them more engaged, if that's what it takes, I think it's ridiculous. But if there is data to back it up, then it's that's at least enough to be something that to consider when the fact that he is, you know, they did a stat at the start of the Yankee series about, you know, how integral he is to everything that the Astros do. And if he hits, the offense normally hits as well and they win. And when he doesn't, they don't. If you can get him going and that's the way to get him going, then you can try it. But at the same time, I think that's a little too quirky for me, though I do want to see him in left field 51 times.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the numbers back it up, and that's a substantial amount of at-bats. So, like, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that Chris is wrong. I'm saying I don't put a whole lot of weight into that where Chris does, and it's not to say that one of us is wrong, one of us is right, and the numbers would actually say he's right. Todd says, I think you're more locked into the game when you aren't sitting in the dugout. Look, and again, these are people, right? So, like, for some people, maybe it matters. Maybe it does matter for Yordan. And then maybe for others, it doesn't matter. Well, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, these people, like, all of these players have traits that sometimes, like, computers and analytics, they don't really put the measure into.
No, but Jeremy, it's the same thing we were talking about when we talk about lineup construction and where a guy hits. If you take a guy like Tucker and he was hot in the four hole, and you suddenly, because you're trying to find a way to move Bregman down, you also, you know, supplant him from where he was comfortable and you move him up, or when Pena was moving all over the place. You want to say it shouldn't affect, hitters are going to hit no matter where they are in the lineup. But the reality is, guys with routines and guys get, you know, and guys with superstitions and guys with a feel, it's part of baseball that if you feel more comfortable in one spot, or you get used to it in one spot, and then you get moved abruptly or however it comes down, it can affect you. So if the baseball players are more creature of habit than most, and that's something that, you know, can shake up a lineup, then it can surely shake up Yordan. And I don't disagree that a lot of times a guy is more engaged when he's playing the field. It's just that our major concern is he gets hurt.
Yeah, and look, to Chris's bigger point there, you're 12-24, figure it out, roll the dice. Okay, I can hear that. I can hear that. It's time for desperate measures. It is playing Yordan daily in left field a desperate measure. Yeah, it might be because we're trying to protect him. But whenever you're 12 games below .500 and you're 8.5 games up behind in the division, is that a time for protecting a player from injury? No, nope. It's really not. So I'm actually closer to Chris's side today with a 12-24 record than I would be if you were 24-12. Like, that's a time where you protect players, you give them days off, things like that. I agree to Chris's point that desperate times call for desperate mm-hmm. measures. And the reason that I asked him about Yordan in the two-hole, three-hole, it wasn't making fun of him. I'm sorry, Chris, that you thought that. But his splits, because if you're talking splits, left field, DH, let's bring up his splits in the batting order. He's much better in the two-hole this year than the three-hole. Batting second, .277 average, .827 OPS. Batting third, .159 average, .568 OPS. So, like, what matters and what doesn't? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and that's valid as well. And, again, you're right. This is whether it's a one-game play-in game type scenario or it's, hey, you have to pull out all the stops. You got to win, you know, 6-7 out of the next 10 games in order to get into the playoffs in whatever sport you're in or whatever whatever scenario fits you best. This is the time to be desperate because of the fact that very few of any teams getting off to the putrid start that this team has gotten off to make the playoffs. Then you need to call out, pull all the stops out. Stop giving guys days off. Stop worrying about if a guy's going to get hurt or not. Start worrying about the fact that every single freaking inning of every game is going to matter for a while until you can try to get above water and start getting your finding your way back into this thing. And that means all pull out all stops and go for it.
713-780-ESPN. Which players are you giving up on? Let's go back out to the HRNP listener line. Holly in Beaumont. What's up, Holly?
Hey, what's up, guys? That's my, thanks for taking my call.
What's up?
I was going to say either Chaz or Jake. I think they both had their chances. They both have had streaks. They're inconsistent. I say we could get rid of one of them, and Pedro Leon is ready. And I'll hang up and listen to see what you say.
Pedro Leon, I don't know if he's major league ready, but he deserves a chance at some point based on how he's playing right now for Sugarland. I mean, he's hot. He's doing a lot of things. But, you know, we just saw the Yankee series where Joey Loperfido sat the first two games of the series for the most part, and you were wondering and scratching your head why, because he's ready. So I think when you start doing those kind of things, you know, and Chaz has been hurt, and Chaz is going through rehab. He's going to go through some rehab starts in Sugarland, I think, this weekend. But, you know, he didn't get off to the great start that he or anything close to the kind of play that he was playing a year ago. Jake's a platoon-type player to me. I know he's been hitting the ball recently. Jeremy's higher on him than me. I'm fine if you don't play Jake Myers every day or Jake Myers falls out of, you know, your outfield rotation. But you got injuries, so he's got to play. But from a Leon perspective, that's I think when you go bring up Pedro Leon, that's when you admit you have no chance of making the playoffs and it's time to go in another direction to see your young players.
You might be right, but I wouldn't necessarily say that. Like, I mean, it could be a spark, right? What's interesting about Leon, a righty, he actually hits righties better than he hits lefties. And one of the biggest problems with this outfield is that they all hit lefties yep. better than they hit righties. That's why I wanted a left-handed bat. And maybe Joey Loperfido turns into that left-handed bat. I'm rooting for that to be the case, so where now you have a little bit more flexibility. But Mauricio Dubon, who's capable of playing the outfield, I think that his best role is being a utility guy, starting 70% of the games, all over the diamond and giving guys days off, which is interesting that Espada has not given a day off to Jose Altuve, Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez, even though he's reeling, and the only off days that Alex Bregman has when he stayed home sick that one series at home. So, like, that's a little bit concerning, I think. I think that Jake Myers is a place in baseball. I think Jake Myers is a fourth outfielder, a platoon option, a defensive replacement type. Do I think he's the best center fielder on this team? Yeah. Yeah, I'll go ahead and say that I think he's the best center fielder on this team. When you look at overall where they are offensively, where they are defensively, Jake's easily the best defensive center fielder they have. It's why Chaz plays left and Jake plays center. It's why Dubon and Jake, when they're both in the same lineup, Jake is playing center field and Dubon is in left. And Myers' production this year has been good. Like, he's flirting with he's 1 point under an 800 OPS. Like, yeah, you'll take a 799 OPS from your center fielder who plays a high level of defense. Jake Myers, the way he's producing this year in small samples, 64 at-bats, blah, 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 blah. But Jake Myers producing the way he is right now should be in the lineup every single day in center field. So of those guys, who am I giving up on the most? I don't love what Chaz McCormick has done, how much has he been banged up, et cetera, et cetera. The problem with having those three guys is they're using Dubon not as a utility player. They're using him as an outfielder. And then Jake and Chaz, they're all kind of similar in that they all hit lefties better than righties, and they all kind of struggle a little bit against righties.
Yeah, look, I would at least entertain a platoon system if that's the case to see what Leon can do. That's fine. But at the same time, you know, I wanted Chaz to be the starting center fielder at the start of the year, but I wasn't expecting to see this Chaz McCormick. And I hope it's more to injury than just a complete fall off from the a year ago. And to say that was more fluky would be disappointing. But for whatever the reason, because Chaz hasn't been himself, and because of the fact that I already had serious reservations about Jake coming into the year, and you're right, I agree with you. Dubon should be that guy, and he is best suited for that role. But because of the limitations of this lineup, he has been forced to play a lot in the outfield and a lot of the innings that one or both those guys would have gotten. It's not ideal. But at the same time,
no.
I think if you bring up Leon, to me, yes, he could be a spark. But to me, it also could signal I want to start seeing young players that might not – that otherwise sure. At the start of the year I wasn't ready to see.
That's probably more likely the case. But I'm not – I'm just saying that if you were to bring up Leon, mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to symbol that. Maybe, you know, it's – Loperfido never gets it going or something like that. Now, it is a crowded outfield. It's crowded with kind of mediocrity, even though Jake's performing at a pretty good level. Like, Chaz is going to be up soon after his rehab. You have Jake. Dubon's kind of your super utility. Obviously, Tucker's not going anywhere. Yordan Alvarez, even though he's primarily a DH, takes up an outfield spot. So you really only have room for one more. So, like, if you're sending somebody down, who are you sending down? Is it Loperfido?
That seems it's Cabbage,
pretty early
right?
to give up on him. Well, I mean,
assuming unless Cabbage goes down when you recall Chaz.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying, though.
Okay.
Like, if Cabbage goes down when you recall Chaz,
now you're,
and then you're going to get Kessinger back, which I'm not big on Kessinger, mm-mm. but you need another utility infielder. He's going to take a Maya spot. Like, who are you sending down for Pedro Leon? I personally think that they should have made a decision on Jake Myers and Chaz McCormick and trade one of those two guys, and then whoever you don't trade is your primary center fielder, and then that would open up a spot. Jake Myers and Chaz are very similar players. They both hit lefties. They can't hit righties. Jake's a better defender than Chaz, but Chaz is fine. Like, Chaz doesn't kill you defensively. So they're very similar. This is bad roster management. That's why I wanted a stinking left-handed bat.
Yeah, this is – whether it's the Crane Gang, Dana, or all of the above, it's there's plenty of reasons to when you start pointing fingers to start pointing there, as well as the players that have to play the game on the field, because I think there's been a ton of mismanagement in the front office before Dana got here, after Dana's gotten here, however the decisions are made. It's not been ideal. And when you take just about every dollar you were willing to spend this offseason besides a backup catcher and put it into a closer, instead of filling the needs that you had, knowing that three relief pitchers were walking out the door in all probability, and the fact that we both were really lobbying for getting a left-handed bat, but for me, just a solid everyday bat that could play, and you didn't do any of those things, there's a whole lot of ammunition there to point fingers directly at the front office.
713-780-ESPN. Who are you giving up on? Yordan is a DH. Jake Myers is a starter. Who else belongs in this conversation? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
5669's giving up on Alex Bregman. Remember when Randy Johnson tanked in order to face the Mariners to trade him? Is it possible that Bregman has reached that point with the Astros? No new contract means that he has lost faith in the Astros and does not want to be here anymore. Well, that'd be a weird way of doing it, because Alex Bregman is costing himself multi-millions of dollars.
Tens of millions at this point, I think. He's already cost himself so much that that's just an absolutely ludicrous theory to try and put any stock in. Because, one, even if you were right, that's great, but you're not getting anything for him, and no team's going to want him the way he's playing right now, because they're still going to have to pay the rest of his contract for this season even if they don't end up re-signing him. And no, he's not worth it. He's not worth it to anybody. He's hitting less than 200. I mean, he's flirting with the Cologne line now that he's down below the Mendoza line. That's not what anybody wants to have to endure, let alone a guy that's about to enter free agency that thought he was going to get paid handsomely.
You just wanted to say Cologne line, didn't you?
I love it.
You gotta, because, I mean, Bregman's not really flirting with the Cologne line.
No, I mean, but he's getting closer to it.
you wanted to use the joke, which I admire. But I understand
Bartolo's
what you were doing.
One career home run popped up on my Twitter timeline just a couple of days ago.
Yep.
And it was
Did it really?
It absolutely made my day a whole lot better watching that home run.
I think the title on the tweet was the single greatest home run in baseball history, and he hit it at Petco Park.
Right.
Yeah.
The great. Yeah, which is a tough place to hit one out too.
Like, yeah.
He went out in the pitcher's park.
In pitcher's park, it went into like either the second or third deck, and
it wasn't a cheapie.
No, and he was 40 some years old when he hit it, and that was the only one he ever hit.
5424. He's given up on the Astros catchers calling games. How much of the pitching struggles can be attributed to Maldi not calling the games this year?
I don't miss
his bat, but having him back behind the plate and Diaz playing first would be great at this point.
I hate that. I hate it so much. I hate it when you start looking at the ERA of the guys that are actually legit Major League Baseball pitchers that have been pitching fairly well. Most of those games have been caught by Yiner. Yiner hasn't had any problems in terms of, like, calling pitches. Even Verlander said that, and Verlander had some very good success with Yiner. Caratini's been a surprise bonus bat in the lineup when he's been in there. Neither guy is to blame for any of it, and I'm so sick and tired of it. It happened again last night into this morning with all this bring Maldi back stuff. That is just the most ridiculous, far-fetched, stupid take that I could possibly... Maldi ain't coming through that door, one, and if he does, he shouldn't be in the damn lineup, and what he's done in the past ain't going to be something he's going to do right now.
Who would you rather have manage this team, Martin Maldonado or Joe Espada?
Manager? Okay, I'll take Martin Maldonado.
See, I do think that there is... Look, I don't want Martin Maldonado on this roster. I agree with you 90% of the way. And I don't want Martin Maldonado back on the 26-man roster. I do think that there is value in calling a game, though. I do think a catcher can help a pitcher. There's no doubt about it. Also believe in receiving skills. I don't think Yiner has great receiving skills. I also don't think that, like, Yiner's game calling is the issue. Go look at where Spencer Arrighetti threw the home run pitch to Juan Soto. Go look to see where Spencer Arrighetti threw the pitch to Aaron Judge, the meatballs that he gave up on top of his spaghetti. Like, that's not Yiner Diaz. That's a pitcher not executing. So I think that Yiner catches too many strays there. But I do talk it a little bit out of both sides of my mouth, saying that I do think that it is valuable to have a catcher who excels in that element of the game.
But we talked about it even in the offseason. I said, then make him your bench coach. Make Espada's bench coach. Make him a catching coach. Let him do something to where he still does all the prep work. He still does all the idiosyncrasies behind the scenes. And he can help with calling pitches with a young catcher if that's something that you also feel is missing. But we forget these people that are so all of a sudden drinking the Maldi Kool-Aid again that he should be back on this team immediately and everything would change. He couldn't hit. He was awful defensively, and if the only thing you're getting is the ability to call pitches, yeah, give him a little freaking the little remote control thing, the pitcher, whatever.
The pitch com.
Give him a pitch com and let him sit in the dugout, but don't ever put him on the roster and let him be a coach. Let him retire from the White Sox and bring him back as an honorary coach.
I don't hate that idea. I mean, I like that idea, actually. I would be in favor of that. 5199, I've given up on Jake Meyer's mental capacity. We've seen mental vacancy no less than three times this year. That is true. He is a deer in the headlights idiot. I can't really argue the opposite of that. But Jake Meyer's has produced this year. Jake Meyer's has played good to great defensive center field, and he has an OPS knocking on 800. Like, we can say that we don't believe in Meyer's going forward, which is fair. Like, you can have that opinion. But to talk about Jake Meyer's production in 2024, it has been nothing but good.
I've admitted it. I mean, look, I don't believe in him long-term at all. I also didn't believe
that's
in
fine.
Him.
Yeah.
And I didn't believe in him going into the season that I wanted him to be the starting center fielder. But I'm not going to knock a guy that's getting knocks when half the lineup isn't. Like, I have to give him his flowers, tip my cap, and say, yeah, he has been a guy that at least is getting hits and extra base hits at times, and he's not killing you defensively. He's a good defensive center fielder. He deserves to be playing more because of the fact that he's doing what most guys on this team aren't, and that's hitting the baseball.
7744, what if Maldi didn't want to retire? You can't just force into a coaching role
agreed.
If he still wants to play. How do you know they didn't offer that? Yeah, I mean, agreed, yes. Yeah, we agree with you. Like, yeah, he wants to still play. We understand that you can't, you know, handcuff him and say, here you go, here's the managerial seat. Like, yes.
I love that listener
take,
literally thought we were trying to, like, drag Maldi out of Chicago, kicking and screaming, yeah. And force him into a job that he didn't want.
Jim Crane, you get on the phone right now, wherever Maldi is, and you tell him he owes it to this franchise to quit playing baseball and come home.
That we were going to hire some people to pull up in a van outside of the White Sox stadium, throw him in the van, and drive him back to Houston.
I think Bagwell could pull that off, though. Like, if anybody can, like, drive up in a van and kidnap a catcher to make him the manager of the Houston Astros, I think Jeff Bagwell's your guy.
Well, he wanted to make one ex-catcher general manager, so certainly would be in line with his thinking.
Man. I mean, he went and kidnapped Jose Abreu from the Miami Marlins. Thank goodness he did that, huh?
Boy, that was
Thank goodness that Jeff Bagwell did that.
He tried to kidnap his best friend and make him the general manager.
Yeah, but he lost out to Craig Biggio and his best friend. 713-780-ESPN.
Either that or made a business decision and went with a winning team.
Yeah, don't say that.
I know it's not what anybody wants to hear right now, but it is true.
And the reason. The reason it's mean is because it's true. Mm-hmm. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Who's Blankers giving up on from a player point of view? And also, how the Astros can take a page out of the 2005 Tombstone Astros. Tombstone Astros, is that the rallying cry for the Stros? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Loaded, ready, rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.